It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam's coming through kind of on the loud side for me, but he is out of town and remoting in from somewhere north of us, I think, right?
That is correct. I am in the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Uh-huh. And are you freezing to death or boiling or none of the above?
No, it's beautiful here. It couldn't be any better. It's about 84 and sunny and perfect beach weather.
Nice, nice, nice. Has been pretty decent here. I understand we're in for some heat, but we can handle it. We're Florida after all, right? Anyway.
That's right.
Here we are again on another Northeast Florida beautiful day and raring to go. So those of you who are always with us, the regulars, thanks for tuning in again. You keep coming into the show, and we'll keep doing it. That's the way we see it. If you're new to the show, if you just found it by accident or somebody turned you on to it, or if you're driving around with your radio on and just happened to hear it, stick around. Throughout an hour, I think, you will always learn something or other. Some of it may be real valuable, others not so much, but we try to keep it interesting. After all, who isn't impacted by the topic of your money? I can't think of anybody, and if they do, I'm very sad for them. So, yeah, never know. Anyway, another interesting week has gone by. There always seem to be points of interest and points of conflict and so on and so forth. This was certainly no different. We had some records set again this week. They just keep popping up. And the poor, beaten down, pummeled and thwapped Dow even made a little resurgence. So that in mind, I'll let Adam take over and describe all the trials and tribulations of the week.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a little bit of a dull week, and I was okay with that. It seemed like summer had officially arrived. Volumes were down. There wasn't huge moves in either direction. And there wasn't a ton of news that was actually driving the market either. It was just regular trading, and it was just one of those weeks that I didn't know what the results were before I sat down and did it, and it turned out it was pretty flat.
Yeah, that's
the Dow saw.
That's despite triple witching day on Friday too.
Yeah, I know. And Friday was flattest day of all, pretty much.
Yep.
The Dow was the biggest gainer, as you mentioned. It was up 1.5%. The S&P was up 0.6, and the NASDAQ was almost dead even. It gained a half a point to end up 0% higher for the week. So kind of not the norm for lately. It's been flipped. The NASDAQ has been up while the Dow's been either down or flat. And the S&P's been notching small gains, but for a dull week, I'll take those results. That was just fine with me.
Every time.
Technology really didn't drive the market this week, which is the first time we've said that in a while. It's been all technology lately, but this week it was consumer discretionary, and that's an area that hasn't done particularly well this year, but it was the big winner. It was up 2.4%. The biggest loser was utilities, which dropped 0.8%, and that made the spread between the best and worst performing sectors about three or four times smaller than it has been in recent weeks. So about 3.2% difference between the top and the bottom,
mm-hmm.
Much tighter range than what we've seen recently. Mm-hmm. Another sector that did really well this week but has not been performing particularly well lately was energy. That was up 1.9% on higher oil prices. So that's another thing we haven't said in a while. Gas prices have been coming down. Oil prices have been pretty steady to down. That was unusual to see energy do well this week.
Yeah, the 4th of July driving season is coming up.
Yeah, but this time of year, gas prices tend, that's usually built in by now, and gas mm-hmm. prices tend to come down this time of year. And a lot of people are saying they're not going to drive this year. I saw a survey this morning that said something like 40% of Americans said that gas prices have altered their vacation plans. So I don't know it didn't say what kind of altering, but you have to assume probably less driving with the higher gas prices. International stocks traded similarly to domestic stocks this week, with the international index up just 15 basis points. Emerging markets fared a little bit better, gaining 0.9% on a bounce back of 3% from Mexico. So Mexico's been in a bit of a free fall lately, but had a really nice bounce this week. Usually when things get overdone like that, that is what happens. However, I would look out for a longer-term downtrend in Mexico. When you see the kind of action we saw over the last few weeks, you do see a bounce, and then you see the downtrend continue most of the time. So just be wary of Mexico right now. Two countries that did not contribute to the rally were China, which was flat, and India, which was down 0.9%. China, another one, just kind of in a long-term downtrend. India's been pretty good lately, so a little bit of a down week, could just be some reversion to the mean there. The commodities market was up a bit this week. It gained 0.5% on gains of 3.4% in oil. Both gold and silver posted small losses, and natural gas was back to doing what it does. It lost 4.5%. The bond market was down just a little bit on slightly higher interest rates during the week. Again, kind of a boring week in the bond market. Didn't see a lot of moves in interest rates, which I'm okay with right now. We've seen way too many moves recently. We saw some economic reports from the housing sector this week, and they were definitely not pretty. Both housing starts and building permits missed their estimates by a wide margin. Multifamily housing starts are now down 43% year over year, while multifamily permits are down 30% year over year. Those are some pretty staggering numbers. Remember how apartment buildings were popping up everywhere during COVID? I don't think you have to worry about that very much in the coming year or two. It seems like that trend has pretty much reversed itself and maybe back to pre-COVID levels or below. Both housing starts and building permits are now clearly heading lower, trending lower, and both are very close to their pre-COVID levels. And in fact, I believe starts are just below pre-COVID levels. Home builder stocks have also started to trade lower, so look for some potential weakness in the home building area. Now, the one bad side of that is that because building is going down, that means there's going to be a little bit more support for pricing. So don't expect prices to necessarily come down just because the building has weakened. We'll see what happens, but it's a really interesting time for the housing market right now, and it really could go either way.
Yeah, I agree. It's just so hard to put a handle on anything in that area. Interest rates are 7%. People still have not acclimated to that, although it might be closer to the historical norm. We've come off so many years of better than that it's difficult. All right, well, a lot more right after the break. We'll have the trivia question and a bunch more information. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we do, as usual, have a trivia question this week, sponsored by Ken Bales from First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. We've been talking about all kinds of things lately, and some good, some bad, and some indifferent. I'll get more into that as time goes on today. But we've had a lot of new all-time highs in the markets, and particularly the broad market. The S&P 500, the best way we have to measure it, has been on something of a tear, setting record after record after record. So I want to know, what does this mean for the future when we've had a first half of the year so strong? So the question is, in the past 11 times when the S&P 500 index had 25 or more all-time highs on the first half of the year, what was the average return for the second half? And I'm not going to tell you if it has a plus sign or a minus sign on it. So we got a big bracket on that one. So in the other years that it was this hot in the market for the first 6 months, what was the return for the second 6 months? Just like that. Okay, Adam, more comments on the fun and games in the market this week?
Yeah, just wanted to talk a little bit about retail sales, which also missed expectations this week. The headline reading was it actually fell 0.1%. The expected was an increase of 0.3%, so a pretty big miss. April's reading was also revised lower, so there just really wasn't a lot of good news from this report. Month over month, the biggest drop was in gas stations, which kind of makes sense with gas prices going down. The good news was a little bit buried in this report, but it was actually that 8 out of 13 sectors posted gains month over month, with sporting goods having the largest increase at 2.8%. Two of the notable decliners were food and beverage stores and bars and restaurants, and that's something we haven't seen in a long time. Another notable decline was in building materials, which dropped 0.8%. Those three categories were probably three of the most inflated categories during COVID and over the last 4 years or so. And so seeing them go the other direction, well, I never liked seeing, prices drop too much. But when you see, if you had to pick some categories to go down, those three would probably be the ones that I did want to see. And so, but it also kind of signals more weakening in the economy, and that's kind of been the trend lately. So I think that if you continue to see trends like this in housing and in retail sales, it's starting to make the case for a rate cut a lot clearer, and could even, I could be swung that there might be a case for one by the end of the year, or even two, depending on how fast things were to soften.
I'm glad you said that, because I was not going to bring it up until I got your comments on it. And most of you out there know Adam and I do not discuss the show in advance, because I like the spontaneity. The reason we do live radio is because of the spontaneity factor. And I came to the exact same conclusion this week that our chances, Adam and I are both kind of dead set against the rate cut this year, saying it's totally unnecessary. They probably do it anyway, but the reason would be 100% political. But I'm now with you. I'm expecting one, and I would not be surprised with two, because things are definitely deteriorating. And it's especially true in retail if you take the nominal dollars on which it's measured and convert them into real dollars, in other words, adjust for inflation. And retail is just not doing that well right now. You know, the consumer is 70% of this economy, and if the consumer decides to take a little break, then that's not going to be good for the whole thing. Yeah, not really sure where it's going, but I'm thinking that way.
I'm not 100% sold on this yet, but it is something that I'm growing more potentially okay with. I mean, I want to see what happens in the coming months. I would need to see some major changes in airline travel, eating out, and I want to see some real signs that the economy is actually softening, rather than just some national government statistics. But I do think I'm more open to it now than I was a month or two ago.
Yeah, what we're looking for is behavioral changes now.
Yes.
It's one thing if you still go out, but you don't spend quite as much money. That's not going to kill the economy. It's when you don't go out. That's when the restaurants start to hurt. So we're going to see now. Yeah. People are still kind of giddy, I think. There's a big wealth effect in the market right now. I've got all kinds of articles on how 401k balances are rising, and that's all well and good stuff. But you know, if it turns, it could turn sharply. Don't know. But I would be surprised if we got anything like a third rate cut. That I don't see happening. I don't want to see it either, because it would portend bad things.
The other thing is, it's hard to convince me that the economy is on the brink of a recession when you saw five of the busiest ever travel days through TSA security checkpoints last month. It's just that those two things don't really add up. How can you have a bad economy when everyone is out spending money all the time like there's no tomorrow?
Yeah,
and I know the economy isn't great for everyone, but I think that the half of the country or so that it is good for needs to also start to feel it before we can officially declare that it's going downhill.
Agreed. There was a travel expert on the news this morning when I was listening, and he was describing how busy they're expecting the 4th of July travel season to be, and he wasn't holding back. If he's right about
really
this,
busy.
Oh, my God, look out.
Hmm.
Yeah, he said.
Interesting.
He said, go ahead and do it if you want to, but it's going to be miserable. Something to that.
Great.
Yeah, now, is he traveling? Yeah, sure, because that's what he does.
Well, we are returning home before the 4th, so I'm happy about that.
You will be really happy about that if what he's saying is true, it's for sure. You know, it's been over a year now that we haven't seen a 2% decline day in the S&P 500, and that's getting close to sort of a modern-day record. We need three more weeks to exceed the pattern in 2018. And that 2018, when you think about what year that was, that was the year that the TCJA tax cuts took hold, and the market was loving every bit of that along the way. So it was a really, really long stretch before we had a 2% one-day down day. And it's coming up again on that one. If it goes a little bit longer, it will be the best in 20 years, the best streak of not having that happen. So I'll be watching that to see. You just never know. All right. Well, let's see. What else is happening this week? Anything else you want to wrap up with? Predictions or anything?
No, that was all I had from the sort of market wrap portion. I do have a bunch of other things we can talk about, but that was it for that.
All right, well, we've just got 2-3 minutes before the break, so I'll hit on a couple of little things, and you can get into some other stuff after the first break. I do remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And I also remind you the trivia question. During the past 11 years where the S&P 500 had hit 25 or more new highs in the first half of the year, what was the return for the second half of the year? Positive or negative? Most people out there listening, I assume, would know who Charles Payne is. I know Adam's a fan, and he's just a real entertaining, real smart guy who makes his living on the street. He had a guest the other day, and I was having a little trouble believing my ears. I'm not going to mention names, but I won't even tell you what stock it is, but he was touting a stock because it's going to double, he said, within 30 years. How's that grab you? Double in 30 years. By the rule of 72 that says time times the annual return, to double your money takes 72. By that rule, this stock's average return would be 2.4% for the next 30 years. My comment, I pulled a Trump on this one. Yeah, but I said, be still my foolish heart. But you know, from my standpoint, talking to this guy, you're fired. Really? Double in 30 years? And that's reason to buy it? I can only assume he owns a boatload of it. You just never know. Another thing I wanted to touch on, I mentioned it early in the show that it was Triple Witching Day yesterday, and that happens 4 times every year. And it's just, it's a funny name, but all it is the expiration on the same day for stock options, stock index futures, and stock index option contracts. So we've been talking a little bit about options here just recently. It always occurs on the third Friday of each quarter, being March, June, September, December. And generally what happens is a lot of activity that day, and therefore usually a lot of volatility. Well, this week we did see a lot of activity, but we didn't see much volatility. And I don't know what that says exactly. I'm certainly not disappointed about it. And I will also mention to longtime market watchers, there used to be something called Quadruple Witching Day, and that added in a couple times a year the single stock futures. but they haven't traded on our exchange for a long time. So since 2020, nobody talks about it anymore. So you won't be hearing about the quads anymore. Just watch the triples. All right, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia questions out there on big years in the S&P like this one, where we've already set 25 new highs. What has historically been the return for the second half of the year? And it's I won't tell you one way or the other because nobody's tried yet. I get nicer after people try to get it. All right. I'm still hearing that Adam is having trouble hearing me. So if anybody out there is having trouble hearing me, please call in and let us know. We're trying to get some adjustments made. It probably has to do with the distance versus being right here. So I apologize if it's necessary. One thing I wanted to follow up from last week, I was reporting last week about Bill Gates, that he has grown a brain or something happened to him. It probably has to do with the potential to make a lot of money, but he's now advocating and actually investing in and building small nuke plants that can be built pretty much anywhere in the country. And the reason this is so important right now, aside from all the electric cars and such, because after all, we already have 7 charging stations that the government put up, so that shouldn't be a problem anymore. But the data centers that are being built all over the place are really electricity hogs. And it's going to take the grid down. It's going to keep some data centers from being able to operate in places where they'd really like to go because of the cost and the labor and so on. So these new little nukes are probably going to figure in a lot in the coming future. But here's a little something more. Would it surprise anybody out there to hear that Congress seems to be doing something right on a bipartisan basis? I'm glad I was sitting down when I read this, and that's it. There is something called the Advance Act that has already passed through the Senate. And the Senate vote was 88-2. Now, there are not many times, as you all know, where we get that kind of unanimity, and this is one of them, and it's important because what it does is it makes these things easier to build. By that, I mean it takes down a lot of the red tape and so on that's always been a problem with anybody trying to build a nuke plant of any size. But this one's going through, and it only had 2 dissenters, Bernie Sanders from Vermont and Ed Markey from Massachusetts, which I would call basically an ironclad guarantee that they would not vote for this, for sure. But the rest of them did, and it's on its way to Biden's desk if he ever comes out of his hole up in Camp David, and it's looking very good that he will sign it. And we're going to start seeing some more of these little nuke plants pop up. And if there's one way that you're going to make the clean energy people happy, it's going to be to convince them that this is clean, safe energy. Not just clean, but clean, safe energy. So hopefully this is a big first step, and we want to commend everybody who is supporting it in Congress, because when they do something right, they deserve the credit, and they just got it. So there. Okay, back to whatever. Now, Adam, you want to hit something?
Sure. I saw yet another article about states people are moving to and moving away from. And this one was probably the least surprising yet. There are 10, the 10 states that the most people are moving to are, in order, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, Arizona, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Idaho. And if you're wondering why these states are the ones that people are moving to, most of the people who moved actually cited that it was cheaper, and they all happen to be lower cost red states that are located near higher cost blue states.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed? I think I would have guessed.
Yeah, yeah. So if you feel like your state is being overrun by people from blue states, which I think most people who live in Florida have noticed the increase in that, you're not wrong.
Nope, absolutely not wrong. And I heard today, again this morning, listening to the news, I think Lee Zeldin was on from New York, and he said that they've been counting the voting registrations, and the theory is that all the people who are leaving New York are the conservatives, so their party registration should be down, and that the blue people in the blue states ought to be up. And it has not worked that way. It's been going the other way around, where actually the conservatives, the Republican Party, Conservative Party, and so on, have added 100,000 people, and the blue ones are actually down a bit. So that's not enough to sway New York to make a big enough difference up there, but it's a good start. So hopefully that means that all those people that are moving to places like Florida understand that we don't want our Florida to be turned into California or New York ever. And so far, looks good, because our voter registrations are showing the same pattern, only more so. There's hope out there, people. We got to make some changes in this country, and we got to make them fast. So, all right, another thing I wanted to follow up on a bit, too. I don't know if anybody remembers this by name, but there's been a Supreme Court case that I've been talking about on and off for several months now. It's called Moore versus the United States. And what it was, in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, there was a provision for people who had investments in foreign countries to have to pay U.S. tax on their profits. And this has led to a lawsuit because of a couple who owned a nice chunk of a nice company, it sounds like, actually, in India, where they're trying to bring resources to bear in places in India that need things like fresh water and so on. And everything's going along fine. And it's held as a partnership, or what we would call a sub-S corp, I guess, where the owners of the company share the profit allocation, and they are then taxed on that part. Well, there's kind of a conflicting tax problem sitting out there, in that there is a provision that some people hang on to, but what it says is that tax is only due when the profit is monetized, in other words, distributed. And there was no money distributed by this company, because they plow it right back into the business to make it bigger and better. Now, they got a bill for it and paid it, obviously, but then they complained and filed suit against it. And that has been tracking through the Supreme Court. And the basis of my interest and many other people's interest in it is it's going to come down to the concept of taxing wealth instead of income. And that is sort of a fundamental precept of our tax system, that you tax income, but you don't tax wealth. Only when something is monetized are taxes actually due. And it's not universally true, and that's what the justices did in this one. Think about a situation here, something as simple as my little LLC or Adam's little LLC, and we are taxed on any profit that's in there after paying all the bills. But we have to pay taxes on it even if we don't distribute it. That's how the LLCs and sub-S corporations work in this country. But that's the only thing I can think of where something is taxed even though it's not distributed, because it could be. Well, this is kind of the same thing, but it's overseas. So most of us have been watching this saying, well, if they come down, the Supreme Court, if they come down on the right side of this thing, it's going to resolve the question of wealth taxes once and for all. Well, it didn't happen. That's not what they decided. So that's still sitting out there, and there's a bunch of us who are very unhappy about it. And the other side of this issue, a lot of people are claiming victory, but they didn't win either. All they said was this particular instance, it's okay. And they were very careful not to generalize anything. You know how this court likes to stay away from broader issues, that they don't like to leapfrog a specific case into broader issues. And they tap danced around this one about as deftly as anybody ever could. So it's still an open question, darn it, because I was hoping all those bills that are being pushed through to tax rich people would all of a sudden just be canned because they would be declared unconstitutional. Well, that didn't happen. And I caution everybody. They're saying it's a billionaire tax, and any government that's big enough to tax the wealth of a billionaire is also big enough to tax the wealth of a millionaire or the guy next door. It is not good enough to just pass this off as it only applies to the wealthy. It's not the way these things work. The camel's nose can get inside that tent. And this happens and that happens, and a couple of Congresses down the road and a couple new Supreme Court justices later, all of a sudden we could all be subject to this kind of thing. Now, when you are taxed on the appreciation of an asset you own and you haven't turned that asset into cash, this world is going to be very, very sad. You can't do it, people. You just can't do it. But the Supreme Court blew another chance. You know, for all the whining and crying the liberals do about this court, they are not uber conservatives anywhere. In fact, if you look at who voted for what in this thing, you might be very surprised at who supported either side. But they did come up with a workable compromise that leaves it open. So maybe next season we'll get another challenge to it. You never know. Anyway, that's the follow-up on what we've been watching, and there'll be a lot more right after another quick break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. It is. In a hot year like this in the broad market, where we've had 25 or more new high records set in the first half of the year, what has the average return been in the second half of the year? And all right, I'm going to give you one hint. I'm going to cut the universe in half. It's positive, which sort of is part of the underlying point anyway, but it is positive. So now, anybody who wants to guess has the advantage of a little knowledge up front. Okay, who's ever heard of a zombie mortgage? A zombie mortgage is something that has gone away, supposedly, and like the Night of the Living Dead or whatever, it comes back into being. These generally came up back in the financial crisis when people had taken out 80-20 loans, or what they call a piggyback mortgage. That was where the loan itself was split into two pieces, the 80% to get rid of the PMI and the 20% to satisfy the down payment. Well, then when housing values plummeted, a lot of these loans went into default, and a lot of them were sold off and what have you. A lot of them were just written off because the people couldn't pay, plain and simple. They couldn't pay. So they sat there until the COVID problem, when the unexpected, at least to a lot of us, the unexpected happened when housing got to be really hot and prices started to skyrocket. Well, then some creative entrepreneurial types started digging back into the old records and looking for these zombie mortgages. Well, it's now become an issue, a big issue. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau has issued basically a warning to people that this could be happening. And I don't know if anybody's going to get one of these notices, but if you do, be prepared to know that anybody who tries to come after you is subject to the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. They can't harass you and all that. So first thing you do if you get a notice like this is you get the information about the mortgage. They are required to send it to you in writing. And if you get bugged by people with numerous phone calls and so on, report it to the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. After all, they got to be good for something. But I digress. So if it happens to you, you are not necessarily off the hook, but there's a good likelihood that you might be. There are many states that have a statute of limitations on these things, and many of those have been passed already. So chances are, even if the loan was never fully repaid, you check with your state and find out if you're subject to the state laws where it just has to be tossed away and you have no further responsibility for it. And I can't tell you what states are best or not, but I'll tell you this, in case you're thinking this is really rare, in New York so far, there have been 10,000 of these incidences in the past 2 years. Now, that's enough that it can capture your attention. If you get into trouble, if you don't get a satisfactory response immediately from all the paperwork that comes, I would certainly not hesitate to contact an attorney. I would guess being attached to properties that a real estate attorney would be the right place to start. But don't allow them to hassle you, and don't just start paying the bills until you know a lot more. So the zombie mortgage, like the Night of the Living Dead, it's back. And just so you know, if you were to get something like that and you happen to hear about it, you understand that this is a problem, but it's more of a problem than, or less of a problem than you might think, and more of a problem than we would like to think. Just a little helpful hint. Let's see. We're talking about things like that. Everybody knows that American senior citizens are constantly a target for the bad guys. There is a level of fraud every year that is generally in excess of $1 billion. Well, the numbers are in for 2023, and U.S. seniors, that's people over 60, lost a reported $1.2 billion to investment fraud in 2023. And Adam and I actually have some direct experience in this, a friend who's been fighting it on his own mother for a long, long time. I don't know how it's coming out. But the biggies, the two really big things, are crypto frauds and dating site fraud. And a lot of money has been lost to both of those by scammers. If you have elderly parents, or if you're one of them, or a spouse, or anything like that, and you start seeing anything weird going on like that, you got to put a stop to it as soon as possible. And it's not always easy, because often the money these people have is under their total control. And I just got a little feedback from the other part here, and she says, Adam has a lot to say today, and I know, I just wanted to touch on a couple of these things. Watch for those crypto frauds, and watch for the dating sites. And if your parents start acting weird, do something, whatever. All right, Adam, what do you got?
Yes. The reason I have not said a lot is that I'm having a very hard time hearing what you're saying on this connection. I don't know why that is.
We've tried everything we can think of here.
Yeah, I know. It's nothing that you've done or I can fix. But anyways, that is why I've been uncharacteristically quiet today. But I did have a couple of other things that I did want to talk about today. There's been an interesting trend in rents recently, and it's very, very counterintuitive. You've seen largely rents dropping across the United States. But for reasons that I can't explain, rents in several Northeast and Midwest cities are bucking that trend and going up for some reason. You're seeing it in cities like Milwaukee, Washington, D.C., Kansas City, Detroit, Chicago, Boston, Columbus, Ohio, and New York. And, yeah, that's... They're actually thinking that it's enough of a trend that it could sort of reverse the national trend of rents going down. And I for one, can't figure out why. I don't see a demographic reason that it would be happening. Now, it could be that new construction isn't keeping up with population growth in those areas, but that's really bad news for people stuck in those mostly high-cost cities anyways who are now going to get hit with rent increases this year.
I wonder if it's related to the high interest rate and the general problem of home affordability. If you can't buy, you got to rent.
Yeah, for sure. And those are states that tend to have high other costs of living, so taxes and things like that. And maybe they're forcing more people to be renters, which is driving that demand. I don't know what the reason is behind it, but I thought that was a really interesting trend.
I would think another possible contributor to that would be the tendency of companies now to start demanding more time in the office. So living remotely now, when you were doing that full time, that was probably a good thing. But now, if you're having to go to the office 2, 3, 4, even 5 times in a week, all of a sudden you want to cut your travel time down. It might involve going back toward the city and renting. So mega trends that way, I think.
Well, I did see that. It's interesting you say that, because there was a recent study that was done by the payroll software company Gusto, and they studied more than 52,000 employees at 6,800 businesses and found that the average distance to work for those 52,000 employees was 27 miles at the end of 2023. That compared with just 10 miles in 2019.
Wow.
So clearly COVID affected that, people moving further away, not having to go in as much. And if they are seeing that return, that could very well be driving what you're talking about.
Absolutely. There are a bunch of people getting caught sort of playing hooky while at home. There are apparently some computer programs that move your mouse around a little bit for you to make it look like you're doing something. And they've been cracked down on them. There's a lot of people in a lot of trouble with their jobs because of that. You know, that's what next, right? But the whole trend back to the office, I don't blame employers for doing that. I think it's logical to me. So what do I know, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see that. I do think that that more flexible schedules and things like that may be the norm going forward, but I don't think that working from home for every company is the right decision, and I do think you'll see more and more people return to the office.
Yeah, that quiet quitting and the unannounced time off that people take, those are all getting a little too easy when you're working at home. So it depends on the job, of course. If you got deadlines, you got deadlines. Okay, we're about to wrap up here. Every time in the last 11 times that we've had at least 25 new records set in the S&P in the first half of the year, the average return for the second half was 9.6%, and that's a plus number. Does that bode very well for this year? It could. History does like to repeat itself. So we'll see. Hopefully by July, we'll let you know. All right. Sorry, we've got to go. This is the Van Lee Financial.